This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for January 20th, 2011. Today we look at the establishment of the Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine, unveiled this week on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And we look at so-called right-to-work laws, which the state could be looking towards, a change which labor advocates say would severely curtail the ability of unions to represent workers. The Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine was publicly unveiled this past Monday on Martin Luther King Day. Members of the board say they wanted to underscore the interrelationship between human rights and economic and labor rights, as Martin Luther King Jr. had made such connections. Over 33 community members from Eastern Maine are on the board, including four current or recent state reps or senators, a member of the Bangor City Council, and Representative Mike Michaud. We spoke with three members of the steering committee on what role the Worker Rights Board aims to play in Eastern Maine and on the issues they feel working people in the state and country are facing. They spoke of the decline in organized labor, the ability for employers to fire workers without demonstrating reason, and the pressure working people are under with the lack of affordable health care. Member of the steering committee and director of the Bureau of Labor Education, Bill Murphy, said earlier polls have shown nearly half of Maine workers would choose to be in a union if they could, but fear workplace reprisal or firing. We spoke with retired teacher Julie Grab, Representative Adam Good, and the director of the Bureau of Labor Education at the University of Maine, Bill Murphy.
My name is Julie Grab, and I am a retired teacher and a member of the Maine Education Association.
And you're part of the steering committee of the Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine. Can you say what this board is and what its mission is?
This board is a group of community leaders, a diverse group of leaders of all sorts of the community that in June 2009 got together and were responding to what we felt were needs in the workers' lives of Maine, and the Jobs with Justice National Group had helped establish worker rights boards in about 15 other states, I think, by that time. And we got together to consider how much do we need one here and how do we do that, which after 18 months of working, organizing, researching, we formed a Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine. It has 33 community members right now, lawyers, faith leaders, academics, teachers, physicians, doctors, many different elements of the community. And our mission is to provide a community forum to legitimize workers' voices and to help remedy workplace injustice.
And how practically will that work?
My name is Adam Good. I serve as a member of the Maine House of Representatives from House District 15, which includes parts of Bangor. I guess if I'll start with the situation with workers today. Workers in Maine face harsh economic conditions. It's no secret that institutions and people at the top of our economy have been able to make it through this economic situation that we're in pretty much unscathed. So on the issue of health care alone, Anthem Insurance Company made an 89.7% increase in their profits from 2004 to 2007. In 2001, they made $20 million, and in 2008, they made $50 million in profit alone. So companies like Anthem continue to post record profits while Maine workers find benefits like healthcare continually out of reach. Union workers are much more likely than their non-union counterparts to have access to health insurance, to receive pension benefits, and to get paid sick time. In March of 2009, 78% of union workers were covered by health insurance at their jobs. Only 51% of non-union workers had coverage to health insurance at their jobs. 87% of union workers participated in pension plans, while only 51% of non-union workers had similar retirement security. 82% of union workers have paid sick leave. Only 63% of non-union workers have the same economic opportunity. The Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine will have two fundamental roles. We'll focus on listening to the challenges that workers face and promoting worker justice. When I think about what's happened to our economy in the past few years, I can't help but think about how the folks at the top, the folks who run banks and oil companies, have made decisions that have really destroyed families' lives and their savings and really their livelihood in general. The Worker Rights Board will counteract that type of injustice by offering space and attention for workers to tell their stories. We'll explore methods to empower workers to speak and act for their own benefit through established models such as unions and worker centers. The Worker Rights Board will promote worker justice through structural changes that benefit workers, such as union recognition by employers, stronger labor laws, and living wage policies. By amplifying worker stories, the Worker Rights Board will support a sense of solidarity among worker and community members and raise expectations for the treatment and respect workers get for their labor. Some of the tactics that we'll use to promote worker justice include public hearings, reports, delegations to employers, media events, and rapid response action alerts.
Bill Murphy, the director of the Bureau of Labor Education at the University of Maine in Orono.
You want to talk about the need for such a board in this state from how you see the condition of labor is here in the state?
Well, there's a tremendous need for both labor unions and worker rights boards. And this statistic alone points to that need. And that is, if you did do some comparisons, in the mid-1950s, approximately one-third of the American workforce were members of unions. And this was at a time when the public sector was much smaller than it is now. And since that time, organized labor in both public and private sectors represents about 12% of the total U.S. workforce. And in the private sector, it is down barely to 7%, which means that for the vast majority of workers, over 90% in the private sector, they are employed on what is known as an at-will basis, which means they work at the will of the employer, which legally means they can be hired, they can be fired, they can be demoted at the will of the employer for any reason or no reason. And the only safeguard that workers have against that kind of treatment is to organize and form and establish a union in the workplace to represent them and to provide them with protections against that kind of arbitrary employer treatment. So the Worker Rights Board, working in conjunction with unions, can play an important role, particularly in terms of bringing to light worker injustices that occur against workers. If they're trying to organize a union, if they're trying to assert their rights over existing federal or state employment law statutes. And all too often, while there are prohibitions when a worker attempts to exercise their rights under the law, all too often excuses are made to fire or terminate them when they are legitimately trying to exercise those rights. And again, those kinds of conditions need to be exposed, need to be publicized, if you will. And the Worker Rights Board can play an important role in that area.
So the board will serve as a conduit to sort of amplify these stories, and you're hoping that the door will be open for workers who are experiencing particular grievances to come and speak with the board. And in the board, in part, a big part of the role of the board is public education.
Public education, both in educating workers about their rights. Many people who are not in a union, they don't have any kind of leadership in their workplace. Some of them are not aware of their full rights that they could really start insisting upon. But also the general public at large. We are all workers in our community. And the more sense of solidarity we have with each other, in other words, support for different struggles in different places of work or different areas of work, that's extremely important. But in order to do that, you have to publicize it, bring it out, have people really understand what's at risk. And that's part of what we will try to do.
And how big is the board again, and how often is it going to meet? What is the structure going forth from here?
We have 33 members on the full board, a very diverse group of people. We have a steering committee that can be up to 9 members, which will meet monthly. And we have already been asked, for example, one of the things we recently did, we were asked by a group of people that were trying to organize themselves around a problem that they're having with state regulations and things, not even knowing what's legal, what's not. They simply asked someone from us to be an observer of their meetings to understand their problems. And that's only a first step type of thing. But we on the steering committee are trying to keep ourselves educated about the problems. And people can approach us with their needs and help us to fulfill their needs.
Julie makes a very good point in terms of there's just a tremendous lack of education and information on the part of many people about what are their basic rights and protections in the workplace. And the board will serve as one more vehicle and avenue in terms of educating people about those rights and protections and ways that they can exercise those rights and where they can go to get more information and assistance, particularly from the government agencies responsible for enforcing the laws to protect worker rights.
Is there a thumbnail sketch about what we know about what's happening in Maine, or is part of establishing this board is to really ferret out the type of need there is, the type of lack of light being shed on worker grievances that aren't being addressed right now?
Well, that's a very good question because there's such a large percentage of workers in this state who are not fortunate enough to be represented by a union. I mean, you can get a brief perspective on that in terms of the frequency of complaints filed with various federal or state employment law agencies. But again, that's only a tip of the iceberg. And we know and suspect often that there are thousands of complaints and grievances out there that are going unrecognized and people giving up and their rights and protections are being denied.
So another role of the board seems to also be about sort of shifting the paradigm of how we are looking at the idea of labor in Maine, as we've seen it slide from such a high union rates to what we see now, sort of shifting people back into feeling that labor is an issue to organize around, that there is some power in organizing around this issue.
Again, Representative Adam Good.
I feel like certain things have happened in our economy in the last few years, and I don't think that a full understanding of what has happened in our economy is really like out in the public. And I think part of that is because a lot of institutions that are really responsible for a lot of things that happen to our economy, the insurance companies or oil companies or banks, they control a lot of the information out there. They hire well-paid lobbyists to influence decision makers. And I think when I think about the role of the Worker Center for Eastern Maine, it's really about making sure that the people at the bottom of the economy are able to make sure that their voices are heard and that their stories are heard. And I think from the position that I'm in, you hear from a select group of people all the time who usually have some sort of financial interest in what's going on. And I think it's important for me and for the people that I represent that the people who are really doing the hard work in our economy make sure that their voice is heard and that they get the same level of respect and treatment.
I can add to that because classically in our Great Depression, Steinbeck wrote a great book, The Grapes of Wrath. And there's one chapter in that book I won't ever forget, which was when the bank foreclosed on the man's farm. And the bulldozer came to level the old shack farmhouse that the man lived in. And he was there, I think, with his gun. And he was going to shoot the guy in the bulldozer. And he says, I didn't do this. He says, I'm only working for the bank. And he says, well, I'll go in and shoot the president of the bank. He says, well, he didn't really do it either. He did it for stockholders. Well, I'll go shoot all the – what's a stockholder? And they said, well, these are different companies that own shares of the bank. And Steinbeck, he did this beautiful showing. It's so far out there. And we are not the voice of the workers. We are letting their voices be heard so that they can do what Adam tried to suggest, that showing them the one place where they could maybe have an impact to improve their lives, and we're going to direct them in the way that we can that would help them make progress and eliminate injustice in their workplace or in the way they're being treated by all those mystical figures out there that they can't individually go to their house and pound on the door and say, why are you doing this to me? So that's what we are there to do.
And to complement what Julie and Adam just said, principally our role is one of consciousness raising and education in helping workers increase their voice. And through that, directing workers to the right avenues in terms of the appropriate avenues that they can take if they want to work more towards addressing the injustices facing them, whether it be through contacting a labor organization, contacting a federal or state government agency responsible for enforcing a particular employment law that their rights are being violated on.
And can you talk about the significance of unveiling the Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine on Martin Luther King Jr. Day?
Well, we chose to do it on this day because this is an important day not only for human rights and civil rights, but also for labor rights. Because we honor Martin Luther King, and as we honor that great gentleman, it's important to remember that for Martin Luther King, labor rights and civil rights were integral movements together. And Dr. King believed strongly that these movements were interrelated, and this quote here from him really demonstrates that, and I'm quoting again, where he says, "Our needs are identical with labor's needs. Decent wages, fair working conditions, livable housing, old age security, health and welfare measures, conditions in which families can grow, have education for their children, and respect in the community." Martin Luther King made that statement back in the 1960s, and those needs are as great today as they were back in the 1960s. And these are the needs that the Worker Rights Board will help workers address, as well as the labor movement has been working to address for many, many years and will continue to do so.
You are listening to Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. Today we are discussing labor issues with labor advocates from the newly established Worker Rights Board of Eastern Maine, and next with the Eastern Maine Labor Council, an organization of union affiliates. We turn now to the issue of quote-unquote right-to-work laws. 22 states have now passed legislation outlawing union security clauses, which essentially require all workers receiving union benefits from collective bargaining to share in the administrative costs. The passage of such laws, labor advocates say, have directly impacted the effectiveness of unions to make headway with wages, benefits, and other issues, and is being used politically to break the already diminished power of unions in this country. Maine Senator Lois Snow Mello has voiced her intention to introduce such a bill in the state. We spoke earlier with the president of the Eastern Maine Labor Council and director of food and medicine in Bangor, Jack McKay. Let's start with talking about this bill that is being introduced by Republican Senator Lois Snow Mello that would prohibit private sector Maine workers from negotiating union security clauses in their contracts. And talk about this move as you see it in this administration and with this current Maine legislature for Maine to become a quote-unquote right-to-work state.
Right. And first off, we call this a right-to-work for less, because the states that have right-to-work for less legislation are in the south of the Mason-Dixon, and a few western states west of the Mississippi. And all of them, workers have a worse deal. They receive substantially less money. They have fewer protections on the job, and all workers in the state. I mean, the statistics are astounding. It's, you know, the average pay, you know, comparing industry to industry is roughly $5,500 a year less in pay. Workers are 50% more likely to die on the job. I mean, there's less money for education because workers have less money to pay taxes. It really goes right down the line. And we see this, that's why we call it right to work for less, because workers simply get less. They have less ability to bargain collectively.
And let's define then what right to work is, because those who support right to work say that it's giving workers more freedom not to join unions. How are we defining what worker rights are here? And can you define this for us?
Sure. Right now, workers have the right, the ability to negotiate with their employer what's called union security clauses, and that means everybody pays dues. Right now, workers are required to represent everybody in grievances and negotiations, in a workplace. So that is legal. 24,000 Maine workers have this in their contracts, where all employees who are covered by the union pay at least a portion of their dues, of the full dues. So what this bill does is eliminates the ability or right of workers to negotiate that with their employers. So oddly enough, this is taking away the right of workers, albeit a group of workers, to negotiate with their employer. Unions will still have to represent those workers who don't pay dues. So one of the tricky things about this is, right now, nobody's required to be a member of a union. You could say, I'm not going to be a member, I won't vote for my officers, I won't vote on the contract. But you still have to pay your representational dues, which is, you know, usually, you know, 70 to 80% of the full dues, because most of the work that the union does is, you know, bargaining contracts, doing grievances and the like. The portion that's considered to be for political activity, and unions collectively decide what they want to do in politics, and politics does have an impact on working conditions, so unions are active in this area. This is the part that's at play between what's called, you know, just representational dues and the full dues. But the only thing the so-called right to work for less changes, it doesn't free a worker from not being in a union. They have that, you know, freedom. I don't think it's much of a freedom. I think it's a negative freedom to not be in a union. But it does change their ability to not pay for dues. But as a union, you know, that and I've worked in southern states where it's right to work. You could have a worker who, you know, files a grievance, spends thousands and thousands of dollars of union pay, union funds in arbitrations, and they haven't paid a dime in dues. And they still are legally required. We are legally required to give full representation to them, or we get sued. It's called duty of fair representation. So it sets up this horrid dynamic in a union work site where you got some members who are paying dues, some who aren't, but they all get the benefit. So we also sometimes we call this right to work for less, because you get less in right to work states. We also call this right to shirk, which means, you know, it sort of sanctifies freeloaders. And of course, this causes, you know, dissension within union work sites and more division, and this all ultimately it hurts unions, not only, you know, our resources, but it also hurts us in that it creates more internal strife. And this is all part of a long-standing anti-union, anti-worker campaign that's been going on for, you know, 100 years. They've been using the same rhetoric for 100 years. And the group that's behind this is, you know, out of Virginia, and they have, you know, certain enlisted, you know, they've enlisted different people in the state of Maine to carry up this banner, but it's a, you know, it's essentially being funded by out-of-state interests. We see these laws as so, you know, pernicious in the sense that they weaken workers' power. And this is coming at a stage, you know, there's a greater political context here, which is, you know, we consistently are receiving less for our work in the United States, which means we get less, we have less purchasing power, we have a smaller middle class, and there's more money going to the top. We have more, you know, investment bankers and hedge funds, people who are making, you know, ridiculous sums of money. You know, I'm sure the listeners of WERU are aware of all that, and when there is an effective counterbalance to it, it's just, you know, it's bad for individuals who, you know, don't have fairness at work and can be fired without cause or for a bad cause. And for our government, you know, for our country, it's just made us have, you know, more like the nobles and the serfs. I mean, there's just, we're almost in a robber baron stage where there's so much power at the top. And unions are, you know, the biggest and most effective force that's trying to, you know, create power for workers and create power for the middle class, you know, given this dynamic. So, and this is a, you know, a major attack, and it will dramatically change Maine. We'll take a big step closer to being a political environment of Arkansas, which is just far more reactionary, far more anti-progressive than the state of Maine.
So in these right-to-work states, the power of unions to negotiate wages, benefits, and these sorts of things has been significantly diminished?
Right. I mean, unions are far, they're a far smaller percentage of the workforce. They're small, weaker. They're small, you know, they're in terms of being part of coalitions, they're far less active. And if you look at, you know, unions not only in the workplace but in the progressive coalitions, you know, we play a significant role in a lot of different arenas, be it, you know, environmental or local agriculture or, you know, the freedom from discrimination of all sorts, including, you know, the right to marry of whatever gender people want right down the line. These having unions be a weaker force is going to affect, you know, the political climate of Maine across the spectrum.
So let's look particularly at Maine right now. Again, we said that the Republican Senator Lois Snow Mello has said she would introduce a bill into the Maine legislature that would prohibit private sector Maine workers from negotiating union security clauses in their contracts. Can you talk about the climate that you see or have heard from legislators as well as the new administration concerning transition to right to work and their position on unions?
Well, one thing that's interesting, and I heard this secondhand, so it was a local senator who's Republican. I'm not going to, you know, I didn't talk to him specifically, but he was very surprised that, you know, why this issue? There's some significant issues with the state of Maine concerning, you know, our budget and appropriations and where we're at that are going to be very difficult to figure out. You know, we have an enormous shortfall and a shortfall in future years. Why spend the time and energy on this particular bill? And he was, frankly, as a Republican, he was shocked. And it wasn't, you know, he didn't quite understand the issue. He didn't see why the issue was, you know, shockingly terrible. But, you know, again, why is this a political fight? And he was somewhat dumbfounded. So it's interesting that, you know, there's some in the Republican leadership who just want to, you know, destroy the progressive community. And destroy unions, and there's others who, have certain principles that they'd like to do and want to build Maine. And I think there's a bit of a split going on there between those two groups. And you know, we hope to engage with Republicans to get them to either support unions, support the right of unions to exist, the right of oddly enough, the right of unions to to free contracts. And also just to focus on other things like job creation, figuring out our budget. There's all sorts of issues in the state of Maine that the state of Maine has that are, you know, we believe are far more important than trying to handicap unions.
So in closing, we see that there will be a training at the Eastern Maine Labor Council building on the right to work issue this weekend. Can you talk about who's sponsoring this and a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. This is going to be from 9 a.m. to 11:30. The breakfast is at 8 a.m. And if people want to come, there's a limited number of slots, and we have about a dozen slots available at this point in time. So please call 989-4141 to register for this. I don't think we'll turn people away at the door, but we would really like to know who's coming because we do want to limit this because as a training, if there's too many people, it can become not as productive. It's being sponsored by a number of organizations, including the Bureau of Labor Education, as you said, the Eastern Maine Labor Council, Food and Medicine, the Maine AFL-CIO, the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, the Maine People's Alliance, the Maine Women's Lobby, the League of Young Voters, the Peace and Justice Center of Eastern Maine, PICA, the Maine Equal Justice Project. So there's widespread, you know, from progressive organizations in the state of Maine, widespread support for right of unions to exist. So we're very encouraged by that and would encourage people to give us a call and come. And if you can't come, give us a call if you want to get active in the campaign to defend workers' organizations, unions in the state of Maine.
And we'll have to leave it at that. Thanks for joining us today, Jack McKay.
Yes, thank you, Meredith.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can listen to archives of this and other public affairs program on WERU.org. You can contact us at news@WERU.org. Thank you for listening and acting.